Right, and welcome everybody back to Puma Venture Capital's podcast feed. This is Amit Hazan again, and want to thank you for continuing to listen in and experience our journey with us in these early days for the fund. And this podcast that we are doing is actually going to be one, the first of many, hopefully, that will be unique in that they are a spotlight of the surgeon venture partners that we have on our team. We're incredibly excited with the individuals that we've put together as our surgeon venture partners. They are such an important part of our story as we tell the story to investors and to companies. And so now we get to tell the story to you all and get you to get to know these people and see why we're so excited about them. And I think that the first person we have to interview today is, we couldn't ask for a better one to be the first. It's Nadine Hashash Haram. And Nadine really exemplifies everything that we looked for in the surgeon venture partners that we tried to bring on. She's got an incredible background that's very exciting and unique. She's got an incredible surgical background that is very important. And she's got an incredible entrepreneurial kind of aura to her and everything that she's done in past years to understand, you know, what we're doing and the important questions that we're asking to figure out where to invest and be successful. And so without further ado, Nadine, welcome to this podcast.
Hey, thanks, Amit. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I thought what we could do, Nadine, for folks that don't know you, there will be a whole bunch of folks, I think, that are listening in that obviously will know you, but maybe they won't know everything about your background. So we could go back and just talk through your background and do this chronologically. I think you have such an interesting story to tell about where you came from, what motivated you in those early days, and how you got into medicine in the first place. So can I ask you to just kind of relive that and just give us a little bit of the background where you're born and on from there?
Sure. And thanks for asking. So for the audience, I'm Nadine. I'm a reconstructive plastic surgeon working in the areas of breast and pelvic cancer reconstruction. And I'm also an entrepreneur. But you're right, my story really starts back in San Diego, where I was born. Immigrant parents. We were living in San Diego as a child. And of course, for those who have visited San Diego, I'm sure they'll attest to how beautiful and incredible it is as a city to grow up in. But when I was about 8 or 9, my parents, who are originally Lebanese, had thought it would make sense for us to move back to Beirut to get closer to our family, for them to be closer to their sort of aging parents, but also for us to connect with our culture and community there as well. And, you know, philosophically, that makes a lot of sense. But, you know, imagine transporting, you know, 8 or 9 year old kids out of sunny San Diego and plumping them in the middle of sort of central Beirut that was emerging from civil war, with all the things we had taken for granted as children not being available then. You know, simple things like, you know, regular electricity, clean water for showers, you know, the basic things. And that was incredibly eye-opening for that formative experience of a young person. To be there in the early 90s definitely had an impact on me as an individual. I also kind of grew up in a time where it wasn't the most stable in Beirut. So I became accustomed to seeing things that a young person probably of my age or generation hadn't really seen. And so things from trauma to blast injuries and others. And I think seeing that human impact and conflict definitely had a profound influence on, I guess, my decisions around what was my value in the world, what would I live my life doing, and what purpose would I have? I was quite influenced by my grandmother, who was very philanthropic in our sort of community. And I remember her distinctly, I think I was about 12 or 13, and she said to me, you know, life is short and fragile, as you're seeing around you. So make sure that whatever you do, it really is something that fulfills you, but also has a lot of positive impact on people around you. And I think that really made me think about, you know, of course, the resilience and the independence of living in that environment, but also really thinking thoroughly about what I wanted to do. And as I saw the trauma and sort of what I described growing up, without getting into too much detail around me, I felt that perhaps my purpose was really around restoring form and function. In those difficult environments, you tend to almost get a bit numb to what's going on around you, but you tend to get very affected by the sequelae of those traumatic blasts and others. You start to see people suffering with, you know, burns, contractures, or missing limbs, or all kinds of things. And I thought that my purpose would be to improve these people's quality of life. And so I started to go on a journey of discovery to find out more about this world of reconstructive surgery. And I was very fortunate to meet a surgeon who was a Columbia chief of surgery, and he would come over yearly in his summer vacations to do, you know, mission surgery for some of the camp hospitals around the south of Lebanon. And I just asked him, I think I was 13 or 14. I said, do you mind if I join you one time? I think back then, you know, 13 or 14 year olds could go into an operating room. And he said, sure, I'll pick you up at 5 a.m. And he picked me up. And I remember going and spending that day watching him do surgery on young girls who had suffered burns, contractures that were affecting their ability to walk and play and do simple things that kids of that age should be doing. And I distinctly remember arriving home that afternoon after that long day, rushing into my sort of family's living room and telling my parents, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a reconstructive plastic surgeon. I've been inspired. And that was my path. And I did that. You know, I went to med school, I trained, and throughout my training, I spent basically 10 years involved in global health. So every year I'd go spend 4 or 6 weeks every year in overseas countries, helping look at any which way possible that I could be a value add in capacity and sustainability building and surgical care. And so that was really that kind of, I guess, first chapter of those profound influences and how they guided me to be the surgeon I am today. And eventually my career sort of narrow, as you narrow and get more focused on sort of cancer reconstruction, which I've been doing for the last 10 years or so. So that was kind of the sort of desire of why I became a surgeon. But not that long after, in my surgical training and my career, I mentioned I'd spent about 10 years going overseas. I realized that we were still limited in what we could do in surgery. And whilst it was an incredible sort of skill to be able to change and improve and save people's lives with your hands, I mean, that's incredibly humbling and inspiring, I still felt that there was still a massive gap in what we were able to deliver for the world. And that was made very, very clear to me when the Lancet Commission published that 5 billion people lack access to safe surgery. I still remember that day. I was sitting on one of those footstools in my operating room waiting for the next patient to come in. And I got an alert on my phone that said that gave that report. And I had just arrived after a sort of 2-week mission overseas as well. And I just thought to myself, gosh, I've been doing this for 10 years. I've been traveling all over the world. I've been working and training in incredible facilities, building great relationships with incredible surgeons in their countries as well. And yet, you know, I've not even made a dent in this 5 billion number. And this number is so big. I don't know how we could ever organically meet that demand. And as I looked around my operating room, I kind of had a bit of an aha moment there. I said, well, operating rooms are just so analog. And everything we do is dependent on, you know, physical co-presence. So we have to physically be in the room together to share knowledge, to share expertise, to capture learnings, and to disseminate that around the world. Wouldn't it be interesting if we could create a software solution that would digitize operating rooms and turn them into smart and intelligent and connected rooms? And that became sort of chapter two for me, which was kind of embarking on a more entrepreneurial career, which then obviously resulted in me setting up my first my company Proximy, and we've been working on that for the last 6 or 7 years. So I'll stop there. I'm happy to get into any other areas, but I think we'll stop there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's quite a lot, and obviously incredibly impressive. Nadine, just let's fill in, where have you been practicing medicine in the last 10 years specifically?
Yeah, so I started off actually my pre-med and training in the United States. Again, I went back to California and studied at UCSD, around sort of UCSD and Southern California. But I have been living in the UK for the last 20 years. I moved here with my husband in the early 2000s. It was supposed to be a couple of years, but we've been here for 20 years. And I have the pleasure of working in the National Health Service here, the NHS.
Okay, great. And so you were in England when you started to think about Proximy. Let's talk a little bit about specifically how that developed. I mean, that's getting a small company off the ground while still maintaining some presence as a surgeon. It can't be easy. How did you navigate that? And take us through maybe through those early days at Proximy, that first year, and how you were able to actually get that off the ground.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely was a big challenge, but probably a challenge that excited me because I tend to love to challenge, you know, to explore things that are new. New learnings and new ways of doing things. But it didn't come without its, you know, frustrations, of course, and it's sort of, you know, having to balance everything in one go. In honest fact, you know, back then I had, you know, I'd grown up training to be a surgeon. I wanted to be a surgeon and I was gonna, you know, the original plan was to remain just as a surgeon throughout my career. But this came almost unplanned. It was almost an accidental entrepreneur. I was really just trying to solve a problem and recognized that the only way to solve this problem was to find that intersection with technology and innovation. As a young child, my father was a computer engineer, so I was probably leaning towards technology and kind of interested in it, but I didn't have any background in coding or engineering, product development, or anything like that. And so there was a lot of having to learn it myself. Equally, you know, I'd never gone out and raised money. It wasn't sort of an experience I had personally. So there was a lot of having to sort of learn that in parallel to actually building the solution to solve the problem. So when I started, I hadn't even thought about the concept of, you know, venture funding and how you go out and raise money. All I was focused on was if I could build this thing, I could try and prove and publish evidence that this could be a new way of doing surgery. And so for the first year, literally self-funded, because there was no real grants back then for digital tech. It was really all around, you know, drugs and diabetes and other disease processes. So I just self-funded some developers to work with us to help build a prototype. And then we started testing this prototype with some of our partner global health organizations in, you know, Peru and Vietnam. And it was, you know, after a year or so that CNN kind of caught wind of what we were doing and published an article that said, you know, could this technology be the future of surgery? And I distinctly remember that day because they called and said, they're publishing a story about this technology you've been working on. Do you have a name? And I was like, a name for what? They're like, a name for this company. And we didn't have a company. We were really working on this really more from a purpose of making a difference. And so we quickly came up with a name, you know, got it all registered, and the article got published the next day. And it was that article that catalyzed the huge amount of interest and reach outs to us from, you know, venture funds, investors, and others saying, this is incredible. How do we help you build this business? And so that was kind of an interesting journey and learning for me. Definitely a steep learning curve, but one, thankfully, went through quite quickly. I think partly because I was so interested in what we were doing and partly because of the impact that we could have. In terms of the juggle and sort of, you know, how you balance that, what was really, really important to me, and I'm sure other surgeons, you know, not all surgeons, but many other surgeons would also agree, is that you need to really have that intimate knowledge of the environment you're trying to fix in these complex environments. You know, healthcare is complex. It's challenging. You have a lot of different stakeholders. And so it was very important to me that I was still, you know, I had my finger on the pulse and that I was still involved in that environment, making an impact, not just from a company and a private sector perspective, but also from within. And so that's something, you know, I'm still very passionate about. I still practice medicine. And I think that's made me a better entrepreneur, but also a better surgeon, because I still love those moments with my patients. But I also love being able to also step away and enter a world where you're sitting with product developers and designers and, you know, those can-do individuals that can find solutions to solve the challenges we face every single day.
Yeah, and Nadine, how much, going back to Proximy and just thinking about those early days and even to Peru specifically and your objectives there, how much has the use case evolved since then for what you've been building?
Oh, massive. I think it's the original vision of what Proximy, what I wanted it to be is still the same. It still holds true. It's really about how do we turn these rooms into intelligent, connected, data-driven environments. But I also needed to be realistic. You know, back in 2014, 15, if I had walked into operating rooms and surgical teams and said, we're going to turn all of this, all these cases into video-based recordings, we're going to help you do video-based assessments, we're going to help you do analyses on these, we're going to help people virtually scrub in, and it's going to be a whole end-to-end continuum, I think it would have been a hard sort of sell in that early days, because you're asking surgical teams to change the way they've been doing things for, you know, tens and, you know, hundreds of years. And so what I really wanted to do was to find a very elegant way of wedging in and getting healthcare workers, surgical teams, and hospitals comfortable with the idea of video and audio in the cloud. And then from that, create and build value with them, so they become co-creators and co-developers of that journey. And I have to say, I think that was the right decision back then, and it has held us in good stead, because I was able to create the category then. The category didn't exist before in surgery. You had telehealth and telemedicine, but there was no category that was really digitizing operating rooms end to end, enabling, you know, virtual telepresence, video capture, video editing and sharing, analytics on the video through computer vision and AI. And so we started off by going to hospitals and surgical teams saying, imagine we could have you educate better and share your knowledge better and have an audience in your case with patient consent in a completely HIPAA and GDPR compliant way. And that early movement really helped us get buy-in. People are like, this is great. Of course we want to help educate and train people. Of course, you know, we want to, it's for the greater good, and we want to help overseas patients, and we want to help our own trainees and our own fellows to get access to more cases. And then through that, through deploying then Proximy through hundreds of hospitals, we started to build the further use cases with them. But wouldn't it be great if you can now record all your cases and have it in a library? And wouldn't it be great if you can now edit and share them and use them for video-based assessments? And now we've got all this video capturing all the different angles of the OR. How do we help better understand analytics in the room, movements? How do we help you deliver more efficiency within your system and more productivity? And so that continues to hold true, and we've continued to develop and evolve in that. But day one, we really focused originally on the education piece and the telepresence piece. And since then, we've evolved into insights and content management and media management in the cloud as well.
Yeah, and you've achieved quite a lot. I mean, just for folks who don't know, I mean, I think you could probably update some of the numbers that I have, but I think tens of thousands of procedures, more than 50 countries, over 500 hospitals. Am I on the right track there?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've been very fortunate. We've been used in every continent, in over 60, 70 countries now, and yeah, over 25,000 cases at least on the platform.
Okay, so maybe let's take one step back just for a second. Just explain to people, practically speaking, who might be curious, just from a hardware perspective, what's actually in the room? How is a surgeon actually using this, or two surgeons in two locations using the hardware and the software technology? Maybe take them through a specific case so they can envision it.
Yeah. So what we do with Proximy is we are a software company first. So we have built end-to-end software all the way down to the bare metal that basically enables you to log in, and you can join a case from anywhere in the world on your phone, on your tablet, on your computer, and you're able to see multiple views of what's going on in the room. You're able to speak, you're able to telestrate on the different, you know, views to make any suggestions or collaborative discussions. And then you're able to go to the library, watch your videos, edit your videos, tag and label them. And we also then generate insights for you around things around the case or specific metrics that the hospital or the med device partner that we're working with is interested. In the OR, what we do first and foremost is we evaluate what hardware already exists, because hospitals generally don't want more hardware in the room. If they can avoid installing more hardware, then they're, you know, at peace. And so we look first and foremost what exists in the room. So you have some hospitals that have integrated rooms, some hospitals that have video towers and robots and others. So we look at that first. And then whatever is missing, we supplement. And often the supplement includes a Surface Pro or a tablet and a couple of wireless cameras. And if some surgeons prefer, we also have a headset camera, like a Vuzix headset, where you can get that first person view. And what we do, our goal is to capture three, you know, at least four views from any case. So one of the views could be from an imaging device, let's say an X-ray machine or a fluoroscopy machine. One of the views could be from a robotic device or a laparoscopic device. So you see what's happening in the abdomen or in the sort of in the body part. And then other views could be things like the anesthetic machine or what's happening in the room, how are people working together as a team. And then that transmits to people watching remotely so they can look at four views at any one time. So really simple, very light touch hardware. We try to leverage existing hardware first and foremost, and then where it's missing, we bring in extra hardware to make it a great experience.
Yeah, so how much have you seen? I can think of so many different use cases now that the technology is out there that, you know, this could apply to. It doesn't have to be doctors, right? I mean, it could be medical device personnel. It could be engineers working on future products. Could be clinical trials. I mean, there's so many different directions this could go. Are you already thinking and doing things in those other areas? And is that the future of where the technology is going to go?
Absolutely. So what we see from a hospital perspective, there's a lot of use around collaboration across sites. So you could have one specialist at one site dialing in and, you know, supporting or engaging with a specialist in another hospital. It could be two different specialties. They want different specialist opinion. It could be learners who are dialing in to learn. So different fellows or trainees who want to also residents who want to learn and see those cases. So there's a lot of that reciprocity of cases. But then with our strategics, we see a lot of work happening around trials, around new market development, new product development, especially with new products that they're still in those early, even pre-FDA approval, where they're just trying to get a handle on how the product is being used and modifications in their early beta testing sites. But we're also seeing it with MedDevice around their rep training, their commercial sales training. It's great for, you know, marketing and sales. They're able to sort of showcase like a great team doing a great case with one of the new devices they have. And it's also around global collaboration, particularly with the strategics. You know, they've got key opinion leaders and, you know, senior leadership all around the world. And being able to share that knowledge and share that perspective is incredibly powerful for them and far more cost effective than sending people around. And then the third bit I'd say is really around accreditation. And we're seeing a lot of use cases around surgical societies and accreditation saying, you know, how do we start to build into assessment methodology, video-based assessment? Because that really should become the gold standard. There's no reason why you couldn't turn up to your accreditation meeting or your review and say, these are my last 30 cases on the video library.
Yeah. Yeah, great point. And a quite a sizable evolution of the technology and use cases from the start to where we are today. How do you think about this going forward? If we kind of fast forward and start to think about Proximie over the next, you know, 5-10 years, how does the technology further evolve? What does Proximie look like 5 years from now?
I think it's always exciting, right? When you're thinking and looking forward. And again, this is super exciting for us at Puma, right? Because we get to look at some of that future sort of mind mapping of where things could go. And it's great when you're having, you know, experts in the field having these discussions as well. So that's something I really enjoy doing. And for us at Proximie, at least, and then more broadly around surgery is, the first and most important thing is to create the network. Imagine this sort of digital, invisible network that is connecting ORs and procedural rooms, right? When we talk ORs, we also mean cath labs and endoscopy suites and all procedural rooms. But if you've got this kind of invisible kind of string or sort of line connecting all these rooms, that's really where the power and the value continues to evolve. Think about these data networks connected across systems, across IDNs, and across the world. What can we do with that? Can we start to better understand through data and analytics, you know, optimization of procedures, optimization of productivity, of scheduling, of all kinds of things within that? Can we start to automate certain processes that surgical teams are having to do, like their op notes and other sort of administrative tasks? Can we start to lean into some of the more exciting technologies around generative AI and some of the tools around that? So as we've evolved, even with our key and strategic partners, we've been able to now also unlock and uncover a lot of value for the health systems and the partners around just the analytics that we're able to derive for them in a compliant way. And that knowledge is not readily available. And so now you're giving them this extra layer of knowledge that empowers people to make better decisions, that empowers systems to work together to think about safety, quality, productivity, workforce. And that's really the power of the digital engine. I think over time, as we think even more broadly, you know, we'll start to see components where, you know, automation will play a big role, co-pilot methodologies will be important, and even as far as telesurgery as well, as we start to think about how you lean into these digital networks that I described and how you continue to build value and create value from them.
Yeah, so if we take a piece of that, you know, and I think about, you know, one of the powerful use cases for your technology and having a surgeon in a surgery and being able to have a very experienced colleague, you know, kind of over his shoulder, if you will, from a technology standpoint, really helping him to figure out where to make an important cut or, you know, in a critical part of this surgery, you know, how to move and what to do. And here are just two individuals who are going through that process. Not hard to imagine the way the world is going, that can be somewhat replaced, as you suggested, broadly by some form of AI technology. Do you have a sense for how far we are in your view from that starting to take over what, you know, that senior individual on, you know, looking, you know, over my shoulder it might be doing, how that might evolve, or the AI takes on more and more of that and the individual is needed less and less over the shoulder?
I think it's a great question. And in my obviously humble opinion, and I'm sure there's others with other opinions, I don't think it's the technology that's going to be the thing that slows us down or the bear. I think the technology is already here, right? The technology around AI, around, you know, connectivity, 5G, 6G, it's arrived. The challenge and what we have to work to overcome is all the regs and all the structures around it, right? The guardrails around it, the validation around it, the efficacy and how we measure it. You know, what approvals are needed? Does it need FDA approval? What's the process to go through that? So I think those are the things, you know, certification across state line, all those different things are what's going to slow this down. But I think the technology has already arrived. We're seeing it in other industries already. In the same way that the data revolution that we've talked about on this call has already arrived in the aviation industry, in the automotive industry, and is now coming into sort of healthcare. So my hope is that, you know, we're not talking decades, we're talking years, maybe the next sort of 5 years, 5 to 10 years, but the friction really is going to come from process as opposed to technology.
Yeah. Well, I have to ask kind of as we kind of start to wrap up here, in thinking about many of the things that you said that inspired you to get into medicine, and to think about Proximy, and you have this really, you know, incredible worldview that, you know, it's probably also not hard to imagine that we'll have some form of telesurgery in our lifetimes, where a surgery can be performed from, you know, a surgeon and a patient being, you know, many, many hundreds or thousands of miles away. What's your thoughts on where we are with the evolution of technologies that are trying to achieve that and where that could be over the course of the next decade?
I think it's a great question. And I would sort of take a step back and say, look, this is fundamentally a system change. So even if you look at what we've been doing at Proximy, how we're going to continue to evolve, and then how these technologies like telesurgery will evolve alongside it, it's a whole system change. You're basically moving from siloed, disconnected, highly non-digitized environments to fully powered, connected, data-driven environments. And what's great is that, you know, when you think about solutions like Proximy and others, is that you now have the medium or the vehicle to do that. And so it's not that hard to believe or imagine a world where you can then layer into that telesurgery as one tool or functionality. Telesurgery on its own is going to be interesting, but if you can then wrap that into a whole broader ecosystem of, you know, what we're talking about, the video, the data, the analytics, and all of that, I think that becomes pretty powerful and pretty interesting. But of course, it's about, you know, making sure that it's safe, that it's effective, that it's, you know, validated. But I don't see a world where that's not going to be available to people. It's already happening, right? It's already happened in China in a number of cases. It also has, it had happened in the US and France many years ago, right? The Lindbergh case. So it's more of a process and culture change that needs to happen as opposed to technology. And it's just how we adopt it. What are the right guardrails we put around it? And then how do we scale it? Make sure we don't suffocate it, but, like, you know, make sure we put the right sort of guardrails around it as well. So it is exciting, and it's going to truly, I think, democratize more access to care, bring better care to patients where it's not available. And it will be one tool of a multitude of tools across that digital OR continuum. And it's why when I think about what we've done at Proximie, it's around that continuum. Telesurgery will be one tool, just like telepresence is one tool. But other tools are also important and relevant, like your recording, your media management, your insights, and other things that us or others will continue to build and connect together to make this a much more richer, enhanced sort of environment for surgical teams.
Yeah, well, that's a great way to kind of end this. And of course, for us, we're looking at a good number of those tools that are in early stages. And you've been a great help to us already in trying to figure out, you know, which ones have the most potential. And that's exactly what we were hoping from our surgeon venture partners. And it's been great to partner with you and have your thoughts on these things with your experience that the colorful experience that we just went through. So Nadine, I first want to say thanks for joining our team, for being a part of the journey for Puma Venture Capital, but also for everything that you do. You've had an incredible career already, and I'm sure much more to go. And we're all following you closely and hoping you succeed in Proximie and everything else, and stay with us at Puma. But thank you so much for doing this, and for everyone listening.
I'm so excited about what, you know, the time I get to spend with you and the team at Puma, because this is such a great way to, you know, share our experiences and our expertise amongst a cohort of really committed individuals that are trying to find the next latest and greatest technologies that are going to truly impact and improve patient care. And what better way to do that than through, you know, a multitude of vehicles, and to sort of, you know, have that diversity, because we can do some great stuff in clinical practice for sure. And there's something great to do that you're doing it with your own hands individually. You can do some stuff entrepreneurially, but if you're also able to influence the next 10 companies or the next 16 companies that are going to make a big, big difference for, you know, thousands and thousands of patients, I think that's very powerful. So I think it's a credit to you guys really thinking about this model where you're bringing surgeons or experts in as venture partners. And it's been a delight so far. I'm really excited to work through the next chapters with you.
Yeah, appreciate that. Well said, and a great place to end it. Nadine, thank you so much for doing this. Everyone listening, thank you all for listening in, and we'll be back, I'm sure, in the next few weeks with another podcast episode. We're hoping everyone is well as you start the fall season into the end of the year. Take care, everyone. Nadine, thanks very much.
Thank you.